This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am your host, Chris Spangle. To my right, the ever-present Greg Lenz. Greg,
I am like God. I am always around, even when people wish I wasn't.
That's the best thing I can say about you, Greg. You're always here. Sort of like marriage. You never go away.
I am your libertarian spouse.
Speaking of trouble with spouses, the lovely Gina Martinez, how are you doing today?
Burn.
Wow.
I'm doing okay. You know?
Yowza.
On a scale of 1 to crazy, I'm like a 34.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a story we won't get into. Maybe if we do a story time with Gina, we can get into
it. Yeah, we might tip into that. I had an interesting experience yesterday, family. Welcome.
You had an experience that
a
movie should be made about you.
I will. Don't worry.
All right. So we've done enough teasing. So go get the Storytime with Gina podcast.
Do it.
Just go into iTunes and type WAL Radio Network, and you can see all of our podcast offerings.
Yeah.
Or you can go to WAL-radio.com to get all of your favorite episodes of We Are Libertarians.
How many are there on there?
I have two favorite episodes. That's what I have, yeah.
Do both involve punching Galt?
Yeah. No, one involved punching Maya.
Oh, so. There you go.
No.
Was it the one where she flipped out? Because that one was fun.
Yes. Well, which one?
Right.
We actually had a letter who said, I love the show, especially Maya's rant-offs.
Nice.
Which is a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Greg, did you do any homework for the show? Because I know me and Gina didn't.
Completely f***ed.
I did do some reading. I've followed the news to the best of my ability, but I am by no means well prepared.
So help me, Jake Tapper.
Yep.
All right, let's get into the big story today, which is the filibuster. There was apparently something that happened with the filibuster, Greg Lenz.
Well, the Senate voted to change the rules that have been around, well, since what, Cato the Younger in the Roman Senate?
Right. Yeah.
And it's pretty huge. It'll affect about everything, especially
just
with this president.
Everything.
I mean, the Supreme Court, all they did was that it no longer takes a 60 vote supermajority to confirm appointees of the president. So the Republicans had been playing obstructionist for pretty much the entire time the president had been in office.
And before that, the Democrats had played obstructionist with George Bush.
That's what you do as the minority party. That is your role. You
racist.
Are
racist. Always minorities with you.
Always minorities. You are the brakes on legislation as the minority party in the Senate.
Right. And so it doesn't apply to Supreme Court nominees. It doesn't apply to legislation. It just applies to appointment nominees. Now, one of the people who really got the ball rolling on this, and Washington Post has actually been all over this today with several helpful charts, and we posted up on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page 9 reasons the filibuster change is a huge deal. And they go on to talk about how the filibuster really, starting in the 70s, when you had a realignment in politics in... You know, in the Republican and the Democratic parties, there were various caucuses. A lot of it was regional, some of it was ideological or class-based, but it wasn't, where Republicans fall in line, you believe this. It wasn't Democrats fall in line, you believe this. It wasn't as polarized. And starting after Nixon, it became very, very polarized in politics as that alignment started to change, and it really just, gasoline was poured on it with Bush. And when you look at the amount of filibusters that were invoked, motions filed, cloture votes, cloture invoked, around 2005 is when the filibuster really became a tool that was heavily used. And one of the people leading the charge for that filibuster and arguing against the nuclear option to allow nominees through, Barack Obama, the senator from Illinois. And he wasn't getting his way on some environmental policies, so he blocked all of Bush's appointments for various EPA agencies.
Which, realistically, if Bush had his way, he would just get rid of the EPA agency
altogether.
Altogether.
Right.
He appointed Rob Ford. He appointed Tommy Boy. I mean, he just seems like whoever's
some fat man in a little coat.
Right.
You can suck in all the fumes you want if you take this position, Rob.
My nominee is Forrest Gump. So just sit there, do nothing all day. So, you know, it really has become a significant problem, and critics argue, critics in 2005 were Republicans, critics now are Democrats, meaning the majority.
So this affected the judicial nominees as well, right?
Yep, like judicial Supreme nominees, Court. Right.
Not Supreme,
right.
Just below Supreme, so the federal appeals courts.
See, they don't go after the Supreme Court because that's what everybody will pay attention to, so then people will see the game playing. And so if it's for the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, nobody cares about the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. You know, we apologize if you're one of the sitting members and you work on the Seventh CD, but nobody cares about you. So it really became a weapon. And so now people like Harry Reid are flip-flopping and saying, well, this isn't how the founders intended it to be. Despite the fact that Harry Reid rewrote rules that were written by Thomas Jefferson.
Ouch.
So,
fairly new is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. So Thomas Jefferson wrote the rules of the Senate, and then Harry Reid changed it because the founders didn't want it the way it was being used. So really kind of silly. So, Greg, why might we be changing these rules? What is the political purpose of changing these rules for the Democrats?
What it does is it concentrates power in the executive office, which is, you know, it's a two-edged, you know, thing. It's right now the Democrats control the Senate, so it helps a sitting lame duck president who has really nothing to lose by going full force on what he's wanted to do the whole time, his whole political career. Right. And he is very much a president who, instead of...
Did you just say sitting duck president or lame duck president?
Lame duck president. I probably said sitting and lame duck.
Yeah,
sorry. But the president has been at the forefront of leading through agencies instead of legislation, because he knows that legislatively his agenda will never get passed. So instead, he concentrates power in the agencies like the EPA, IRS, any of them. He puts in political appointees, and right now they're not able to pass the Senate. Now they are, because it only takes a simple majority. And what you'll see is the agency's playing a bigger role in policy.
Right. So you had the head of the ATF, who just got confirmed finally. He had been, I think, the entire presidency of Barack Obama. He wasn't actually appointed by the Senate, but he was the acting head of the ATF. I mean, it's been that crazy, and the Republicans have tried to hinder the executive branch as much as humanly possible. And as libertarians, whether you're a constitutional Republican type libertarian or some other type of libertarian, you want less executive power. And what these appointees do is they come in and they write new regulations. And the easier their job is made, the more appointees there are, the smoother these offices flow, the more the president gets his way, the more regulations.
It allows him to rule by executive order. I declare this, so we shall pursue this.
So what happens when the majority shifts next year or next voting season?
Well, why don't you answer your own question? What do you think you'd do in that situation?
Crap my pants, probably. I mean, right now it's a situation where it seems like it benefits the Democrats, but in the event that the votes shift the majority one way or the other, it seems like a loaded...
So you're probably going to have Republicans regain control of the Senate next year. At least that's what people are predicting.
Wow.
And that means that now you can't filibuster. You know, it's just a 51 majority vote. So they're going to vote against every one of your nominees. And even better, when you're the Republicans, and then you're in power and you have the presidency, you can just appoint whomever you want, because presumably if you take control of the Senate next year, you'll regain control of the Senate for probably the next 6 to 8 years.
How do you feel about Sarah Palin as a head of women's health
terrified.
Services?
Terrified.
Yeah, or maybe reproductive rights organizations
or
with
Sarah
Rick Santorum.
Or Sarah Palin as head of the EPA.
Yes.
Or Sarah Palin as head of the ATF.
We don't need scrubbers on those coal-burning machines, says G-Dub, and thus...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, that's the thing, though. The reason the filibuster exists is to enforce moderate candidates for the head of agencies, the governing agencies. And so its entire purpose is so you cannot get ideologues into those positions because they have such influence.
But whoops.
Whoops. Now it is Robert Borg was a Supreme Court appointee. And was that under... that was under...
I think it was HW.
HW,
and that's why then they went to... It was under HW, and I think...
they went to Clarence?
I think it was O'Connor.
O'Connor.
Yeah.
O'Connor.
She was more moderate.
And Borg was very much someone who was a controversial selection. He was as fundamental Christian as it gets. Extremely controversial. And hence, we don't have him as a Supreme Court justice
now.
That
was Reagan.
It was Reagan.
Yeah.
Okay, and so... Now, granted, in this scenario, that doesn't necessarily apply because it still doesn't affect the Supreme Court.
Right.
But you start moving up Robert Borgs onto federal courts.
Right.
And then that's when you want – I mean, then essentially women's reproductive rights cases, assuming you have Republican rule for a period of time, those aren't getting overturned.
Dang.
Uh-huh. And so the effects won't be immediately recognizable, but in time, if there's ever a dominant period – of rule by either party is when you will see a drastic difference in the cases the Supreme Court even gets to try.
Whoa. So since we have a Congress that no longer can functionally operate the federal government, is this a capitulation on some level that the executive branch will now just rule the government and that this is how government will operate from here on out? It will all be operated under federal agencies and their regulations.
Yep. So we have not necessarily a king, because Congress can still, you know, pass legislation, but the president doesn't necessarily have to sign that. But it's a really, really bastardization of what we intended from the time we drafted the founding documents.
The whole point of the Senate was to cool the passions of the people. And our founding fathers, I forget which one, I think it was Jefferson, wrote about cooling the passions of the people, that the House represented the fiery nature of the people, that, you know, there's this schizophrenic nature in our society where, you know, we think this one thing, but then we want to uphold this. You know, we think it's stupid when Janet Jackson can't show her nipple on TV, but then we're outraged when Janet Jackson shows her nipple on TV.
Right.
You know, these weird mood swings, and the House was invented to be the representation of that passion. The Senate was there to be slower, more plodding. It was originally designed to have your general assemblies, your state legislatures, select people to the Senate, and they would select wise men to go sit on this deliberative body and would stop the fiery passions of the House and slow the growth of the executive branch. And so this is just the complete opposite of everything that was designed by our federal government.
It's like the brakes went out and you're driving down a hill. I mean, we've already... Bush accelerated the... I mean, every president tries to expand his power. Every single president wants to expand the role of the executive government. Bush really did it with the signing statements. That was... He decided, hey, I interpret the law this way, therefore I will enforce it this way. The problem is... What you're going to end up with is tyrant rule. You're going to end up with presidents who get popularly elected, like, let's say, a Rand Paul wins. All those welfare liberals better start running for the hills, because
right.
He will appoint someone that the head of the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services that's under fire right now, and they'll decide, well, we're going to pursue these policies.
Right.
You know, because we believe in the limitation of government.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. Hopefully.
So... Good times.
Good times.
So what else should we discuss about this here filibuster?
I think we should just appoint Rob Ford president forever.
That is forever. Such a good idea.
Forever.
We're just going to elect him dictator and let
yes.
him go.
And yep, we supply him with enough drugs, alcohol, and strippers, and he won't even govern. We'll just kind of be on our own. It'll be great.
I mean, it worked for Hitler for a minute.
Yeah.
See, you always got to bring Hitler into it.
Well, I mean,
it.
He was elected, and then he just... elected not to have elections anymore.
Yeah. On behalf of the people.
Let right, me tell yeah. you something. This year, Rob Ford, listen, we talk a lot of crap about Canada because those bastards up in the great white menace of the north, Gina,
yes.
Did you know that 98% of Canadians live on the American border?
You know, I'd read that before, yeah.
It's within 100 miles or so.
Yeah, well, you know why that is?
Because so much of it borders Alaska and...
False! Because they're plotting to take over the United States. They've already sent in their Canadian drones, those damn geese that poop all over the sidewalk.
Cyborgs.
Yes.
Cyborgs.
I've seen those, yes.
Listen, if you see a Canadian drone, shoot on sight.
Yes.
And secondly, they send in their...
Gina Martinez does not endorse that statement.
Then they send in Michael J. Fox and Dan Aykroyd and Martin Short and John Candy trying to tell
Candy's
us...
Candy's Canadian?
Yes.
Bieber.
God.
Bieber.
Bieber.
Okay, well, that's a menace.
Bieber is trying to infect your children with the disease of Canadianism.
It's like baby, 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 ooh. Mm-hmm. Have
you ever had Canadian food?
Only Canadian bacon.
No, which is ham.
Right.
It is smoked ham.
Right.
That is faux bacon.
I might have had that poutine. Poutine?
Yeah.
So we really are not fans of Canada here on this podcast.
Speak
and if you're
for yourself, I have a few Canadian friends.
No, you're part of the problem.
Yes.
I have Canadian relatives.
I'm sorry. It needs to be put to death.
That's also known as a double secret agent.
Right. I'm gonna pull a Maya here, and I'm just saying that if you're Canadian, you need to have moral principles and become an American.
Yes.
Just admit it, and stop saying, "A, you bastard."
We offered them, essentially, statehood under the Articles of Confederation, and Quebec rejected it.
I am sorry, but Strange Brew totally negates your entire argument.
Strange Brew?
You know what?
You haven't seen Strange Brew?
I have no idea what this
is. You have homework.
Oh.
You have homework.
Again, she's falling in love with a Canadian movie. They get you every time, these bastards.
I know.
Well,
so
put that in your iPod.
So mark this up. One more for the sneaky Canadians. They
broke our filibuster, sons of bitches.
They have elected the mayor of Toronto, the mayor that Detroit deserves.
They do.
They did. They've elected Chris Farley.
Charlie Sheen, like, it is that level. Like, I don't know that in Canada it's as big a story as it is here, and here it is nothing but support. Guy is awesome. He has a picture. I saw it in chat. It's him with a bunch of homeless guys around a burning trash can with like a beer and crack pipe in his hand, getting everybody like drunk hugs. It is epic.
Niece posted it to my wall and said Thug Life. By the way, James Niece, supposedly going to be a guest on tonight's We Are Libertarians, but
has failed once again.
It still isn't an hour and a half after the show started, so I told him 6:00. It is now 7:53. He is not here.
I mean, I drove from Irvington and got here in about 25 minutes in rush hour traffic, so
right.
There's no reason he can't get here.
I came in from Broad Ripple myself, and that's when I found out at about 5:45 we were going to be recording, so
I know.
I feel you.
Gina just rolls with the punches.
Yeah.
I try.
So this mayor of Toronto, I mean, how much do we really need to explain? I mean, if you don't know who Rob Ford is, you're missing out on this political celebrity of the year.
Oh, he is everything I want in a politician. He's populist, he parties, but he doesn't apologize for it.
Right.
I mean, when he was in his election, the female candidate that went against him goes, "I'm pretty sure he's used crack before," and he responds with, "Oh, it's all lies. You know, I've met this woman. I'm not sure she has all the her screws or one of them's loose," and plays it off. And then, no joke, a week later, up shows a picture of him with a glass pipe with a beer in his hand, partying at some, and then peeing in a parking lot
underneath the bridge somewhere with the homeless chaps.
Well, where else are you going to craft policy? You have to engage the populace.
You have to go out and you have to be a man of the people and talk to the people.
Exactly.
Especially the ones under bridges.
Right.
Yeah, he is a modern day Huey Long.
Nice.
All right, listen to this clip. This is Rob in a press conference. Hold on, we got a crappy YouTube ad here, and it's Jimmy Fallon. I'm sorry, you're not funny. All right, so skip ad and play.
Okay, so that's all I have to say for now. And the next thing, I want to call Mayor Britannia in Hamilton and tell him that we're going to have to spank the little tiger cats. Oh, and the last thing was Olivia Gondek. It says that I wanted to eat her pussy, Olivia Gondek. I've never said that in my life to her. I would never do that. I'm happily married. I've got more than enough to eat at home.
Thanks. What about...
Okay, so here's my big question. Number one, who brought a manual typewriter to that interview?
Right? Seriously.
Number two, I'm really glad he's got his appetite satisfied at home.
Yes.
I've got more than enough to eat at home.
Uh-huh. That guy is my new hero.
Oh, he really is.
He is the most exciting politician in my lifetime.
Let me see if I can find the clip of him.
That's better than Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah.
There's an undercover video of him where he is just going off, where he's like, and then I'm going to punch him, and then I'm going to kick him right in the face.
It was everything Howard Dean wished
DC.
He had said.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right, so here is the Toronto Star, an exclusive video of Rob Ford, and there's bad language in here, so watch it.
Cover your ears, ladies.
I'm gonna rip his fight. I'm gonna rip his face out. I'm gonna punch his eyes out. Listen,
I can barely even understand him.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's moving a million miles a minute. He's punching the air. I mean, listen. I'm a bigger fella. All right. I might have a bit of what they like to refer to as a weight problem. We're watching Tommy Boy before
Farley.
The show tonight. Yeah. It just gets lodged right here. you know, I'm a bigger fella. And listen, I don't have that much energy ever.
Oh, I do. Well, I know, I'm not all that big.
Yeah. So, but you're hopped up on crazy.
Yeah, equally as terrifying.
So.
The question is this all just some sort of undiagnosed complex of he's living in Canada, but he's actually at heart an American. And so all that Canada has driven him crazy because there's been no release.
It's an imaginary borderline. It's all North America.
Yeah,
right.
From the tip of Mexico all the way up to Alaska, we're all North Americans, so we all share the same crazy at heart.
Yeah. I on a serious note, I really do feel like this guy's way out of control. Like, it is funny and it's fun to laugh at it, but, you know, at the same time, you just see him, he just seems to be totally out of control. I mean, am I wrong in reading that, or do you think he's just a boisterous, loud, fun-loving guy that is misunderstood?
Boisterous and fun-loving, I think he's crossed that. He's using hardcore drugs. He is going to political, like, he was at City Hall, like, that was when one of people started to get worried.
Right.
He was hammered, like flying around the dance floor, grabbing girls on the butt. Like, just.
It just sounds like a good time.
They said, don't go to the Canadian football game. He goes to the Canadian football game, and people are like cheering him. They're like, yeah, woo! That's how they cheer in Canada. But no, I mean, the people of Toronto, I bet his ratings have never been higher.
Well, they've stripped him of, like, most of his power. The city council has. So
right.
he's really not much more than the Prime Minister of England.
It's really true. I mean, he is just sort of the head buffoon of the city.
Yeah, and he was actually probably a rising political star. His family's extremely wealthy. They own a printing company that's a multinational, probably billion-dollar company.
His brother's on the council as well.
Yeah.
Kevin Farley. Kevin Farley's on the council.
Yeah.
So
He's if he can get it under control, it's not a sad story. But I have a feeling this one isn't going to end well.
Yeah. I mean, he really does. You watch that video of him, you know, it's the Toronto Star video of him undercover. I mean, he just looks hopped up on something.
Yeah.
So
he's not healthy. And
it's not life.
No. And he got thrown out of a hockey game for being too drunk. That, in Canada.
How do you even do that?
Yeah. I mean, that's tough to do. It is. That's like being a soccer hooligan and getting thrown out.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He could run on that.
Hey, Mittens.
Mittens got a little feisty.
Mittens is being mean lately. Listen, I love you, but I will kick you out of my house.
Get him.
So, sometimes you got to show these cats who's boss.
Can I segue? Can somebody explain to me what happened with Arizona abortion laws recently?
We don't talk about that on the show.
Was there a ruling, in fact, involved on Arizona? I mean, it's Jan Brewer, still the governor, correct?
I think so.
And she's definitely friendly with the Tea Party, and that's a very Republican state. So I wouldn't be shocked if there were more restrictive abortion requirements in Arizona.
Yeah.
I know Texas was kicking around the idea of making you look at the ultrasound before you decided to have an abortion.
Right.
Okay, so it looks like U.S. Supreme Court this week. So a court of appeals for the Ninth Circuit decision against an Arizona law that restricted non-emergency abortions after 20 weeks. And the law was enacted based on evidence that shows children experience pain beginning in at least that stage of pregnancy. So
20 weeks. So realistically, you're looking at what, decently into the second trimester?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a halfway point.
Halfway point.
So
yeah.
Like if 40 weeks is your average pregnancy, 20 weeks is smack dab in the middle.
I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on abortion, actually.
I would really rather not.
I would love to hear them. I think that's a fun topic to discuss.
I really don't think it is.
Well, no, me personally, I'm pro-choice, and that everyone should be able to make their own decision and exercise their own free will, because not every female that gets pregnant is prepared for the responsibility of raising children. But even when it's been inconvenient for me to have a baby in the past, if I found myself with child...
Don't worry, we'll edit that out, kid.
No,
she
it's
didn't
okay.
mean that.
It's inconvenient at times.
Right.
So let's say you're running for office, going to school, working a job, and you find yourself pregnant. Might be a little inconvenient.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been pregnant for 10 years.
Right.
Mine's just full of pizza.
Well, if it comes out and starts screaming and demanding your breast, then you'll have another issue.
Who doesn't? Meow.
Plus a couple diaper changes a day. At least two is good.
Yeah.
Listen, we've all had those days. Rob Ford, several of them. All right, let's move on.
No, I would just... It's an interesting thing.
No, it's not.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, Spangle.
I would like to move on to Jeff Wolf's question. Jeff Wolf, thank you.
Hey, you know what? Women's rights deserves a moment, and I'm going to stand up for it. We should at least do more research into this abortion thing that's happening.
You have,
because it could be huge, and it's
you've
going
taken
to be,
a moment, and
God
then
damn it, Spangle.
I just
abortion gets heated.
Why do you flee?
Yeah, he's terrified.
Did you see what happened to Richard Murdoch? Do you really want to Richard Murdoch this podcast?
Richard Murdoch,
but he was
not,
talking
it's not
about
even relevant.
No, he's not the legitimate rapist.
No, he's not the legitimate rapist.
That was Todd Akin. And thank God her uterus had chaff to put out any attack on it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, Jeff Wolf, thank you for being patient. We didn't get to Jeff's question last podcast. As you know, if you listen to the show, we love taking your questions and answering any questions that you might have. I think the listeners lately have learned a lot from them, and it means that we've got we still research the questions a little bit, but in these slow news periods when there's not much to talk about, it is great when you write in your questions, and we'll take anything. We'll take you know, how big of a shoe size does Greg wear?
14.
Liar. And or you know, how many children does Gina have?
14.
And then or you know, I'm running for office, what should I do with this? Or or
what are Chris Spangle's views on abortions?
Right.
Oh, please, somebody do that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
get to that later, because there was some listener who wrote in and hated my take on the last podcast. Let me tell you something, buddy.
What was your take as far as on religion?
Yeah. How dare I not agree with him was basically the summation of the email. But
I had no idea libertarians supported a state-sponsored religion of atheism.
That's right. No, we're just teasing, buddy. Maybe.
I'm not.
No. All right, so Jeff Wolf writes, Chris and Greg and Gina, I'm wondering what your take is on the liberty movement's appeal to those on the left. This one's for Gina Bear, apparently.
Excellent.
I, for one, never supported Republicans before taking an interest in liberty issues. Kudos, sir. I have always been a hardcore believer in individuality and personal responsibility, but I have always been anti-war and against social conservatism. For people who feel strongest for individual freedom and civil liberty issues, the libertarian movement is a solid sell. I had no real trouble in accepting the fiscal conservatism inherent within the philosophy, but all over Facebook threads, all I hear is Democrats who are the spawn of evil and Satan, and how we really need to vote Republican if we're libertarian. Oh, Creighton's going to throw down. I, for one, choose this philosophy as a protest against both dominant statist parties. What does it matter from which of those sides I came in from? Why does the liberty movement want to alienate former Democrats? There are just as many policies on the right that are anti-liberty as on the left. I understand that all of them are available candidates more likely to find a pro-liberty one on the right, like Amash, Paul, Massey. But I'm from the left. I'm saying liberty made sense to me when it was properly presented to me. and it was natural in so many ways as it shared ideals I already believed in.
Right.
It seems like with the current state of affairs of Obama proving to be no better than Bush, the eyes are opening on all sides. There is a golden opportunity to grab people who, like myself, became utterly disillusioned and fed up with Obama and pull them towards a third party. But all I see are diatribes of against anyone who voted for a Democrat. It's disheartening to see so much energy in the movement being pushed behind who's the real libertarian.
Yep.
Who's faking.
I totally agree with
what
this book writer.
Gina Baird, lead us off.
I think that one of the Libertarian Party's biggest downfalls is that we try to out-libertarianism each other. And by doing so, we make ourselves exclusivist, and we, like the thing with the Fox News guy, help me, what's his name? Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, right?
Calling himself more of a libertarian.
Can Glenn Beck be a libertarian? Well, hell yeah, if he wants to say he's a libertarian, he can be. And if we stand in front of him and say, no, Glenn Beck is not a libertarian because of X, Y, and Z, well, guess what? That is one fewer libertarian that can vote for us and millions of fewer followers that can benefit the party. So that's libertarians being foolish, in my opinion. Personally, I tend to be libertarian on many social issues. And fiscally, I think the libertarian stance makes sense, but I'm not a staunch libertarian when it comes to fiscal policy, simply because staunch libertarianism on fiscal policy is basically don't tax me, bro, don't take any money of mine, don't do anything with it. And my standpoint is, if we have to work within the system that exists, we can make changes to minimize those concerns that libertarians have. But if we're working within the existing framework, we still have to find the best use of the money that is being collected, which in my opinion tends to be less on the mechanical equipment that we use for our defense. And when I start talking about defense, most people assume I'm saying, you know, don't give a soldier his paycheck. And that's not the case. I think our soldiers...
it's about canceling the F-16 in the congressman's district when we no longer need F-16s, really. I mean, we're retrofitting F-16s with drones.
Did I ever tell you I used to make... Well, I didn't personally make. I used to work for a company that made components of the F-16.
No.
Yeah, that's my background.
Well, I think to your point...
yes, back to that point.
I think that you are... You say that now, but I think after 2 or 3 years of hanging around with us, having your ideas challenged by someone like Maya, you're eventually going to go, you know what, I just can't argue with Maya anymore, and you're going to become more quote-unquote libertarian.
Oh, I can always argue with Maya.
That happened to Greg.
What?
You were fairly libertarian-leaning, and then you got on this podcast, and look how you've changed over the last year.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny is I always knew what I believed, and I was never able to verbalize it and really flush it out until I started hanging around you guys.
Right. And now he just won't quit. But
thank God for that.
I know. Greg actually got a compliment in one of the letters this week. Like, you guys are so funny, especially Greg.
Greg
is like,
funny.
They like me. Someone finally likes me.
Well, you know, I said that. I paid my mom to make a fake Facebook account. And I was like, hey, go catfish Wall.
I had to pay my mother.
Yeah, you know, but I figured it was a jobs program.
Yeah, for sure. James Neese, who was invited to be on this program starting an hour and 10 minutes ago, even though he said 7, I told James 6 because he's James. He is a mutualist, so he is an anarchist mutualist, anarcho-mutualist. And what he believes is that people will live in little mutualistic societies, so basically like hyper-communitive socialism.
Very communitarian.
Right, no property, everybody lives within these little communities, and you share your property, no one has property rights. Okay, now I have...
Except what you create.
Right. But James is not a socialist. James does not believe that there should be any government force, although I kind of have challenged him on how he plans to keep people from owning property and making them share it. But that's his belief. Does that mean that he's not a libertarian because he doesn't want, you know, where does he best fall in the spectrum of today's political parties?
He explained it beautifully he was still like 2 hours and 40 minutes late to the podcast that he came on at the end. And what he said is, you know, essentially what Gina said, listen, if we're going to spend this money regardless and we're in this system, why don't we at least spend it on something that's I think his word was cool. And it was, you know, like for instance with Gina, instead of spending it, you know, on, or like you, F-16s, why don't we spend it on VA benefits?
Right.
Why don't
right.
we spend it on limbs for people that lose a limb, for S-CHIP,
so his,
XYZ?
Yeah, his belief as a left libertarian is that we have the framework, we have the system, and as we start to work backwards, let's take away the stuff that from the military-industrial complex that is anti-peace. Let's give tax credits back to the poor people first. You know, we get the whole jobs creator thing, but let's you know, as you're peeling things back, consider those in lower socioeconomic brackets first before you consider those at the very top.
And I thought Sarvis, that Virginia governor's race, was the first time I've always been a proponent of picking off economic conservatives who really don't care about social issues. I've always thought they're the most likely to come towards our message and the liberty message. But after watching that and seeing the exit polling data, I came around to the idea that it's time for left libertarians to assume the lead role in the messaging, because
I agree.
If you can win by saying, you know what, I support these social programs, but I am so tired of playing world police. I am so tired of saying that I'm going to give $1 billion to this government contractor instead of just giving it back to the state and making it contingent on spending it on education and healthcare. It's a winning message, because you can do it and lower taxes at the same time by spending more on important government safety net programs, while at the same time restricting the budget and causing it to be more efficient by eliminating the military-industrial complex and corporate subsidies.
Not eliminating it, but minimizing it, I think.
Yeah.
I think that even beyond the military, the police, the militarization of the police forces is also costing the average American taxpayer a tremendous amount of cash that we otherwise... Are you with me?
We're taking a picture of me in mittens.
I know, we're doing a photo shoot.
Right.
No.
Sorry.
Edit that out. But no, continue on your point, because I was...
I'm with you. But so, like, beyond the military equipment, the equipment, like, our police forces don't need tanks. Our police forces don't need drones. And when we, the American people, allow that to happen, we're wasting our tax dollars while Americans are suffering. So we're adding to the suffering with the tax cash... Right. Instead of eliminating the suffering with the tax cash. And I guess that's what pisses me off.
Yeah.
That's what grinds my gears, America.
That's what grinds your gears, huh?
It does. And it's, you're never going to get far by waging a war on poor people when that's your political message.
Yep.
And so,
some people have, though. I mean, we're saying you're never going to get far. We've seen people go pretty far.
No, but not nationally. You're never going to convert someone if your message is, God, if those lazy people would just get up off their asses. You know, that is not a winning argument whatsoever. The winning argument is, realistically, how can we position libertarianism to show that it can have the greatest effect on people's lives?
Right.
And that can be done through a left libertarian framework. And I know Creighton's going to kill me.
Right.
I am so going to get trolled. It's not even going to be funny.
You had it coming.
Creighton went to Washington and developed a deep hatred of anything left.
Well,
like, Creighton will only take right way, one way streets.
But also, a lot of it is, he is a true believer. I mean, you won't find many people more committed to the libertarian movement or liberty movement, period, than Creighton Harrington. And he doesn't like, he really wants to get rid of that element of left libertarians that talk about pot and communal living and, oh, wouldn't it be great if we sang Kumbaya, held hands, and sat
really
in incense film
him.
Rooms. Yeah. Because that has always been the detriment, is whenever you've, in national libertarian politics, the first question is, tell me about your thoughts on drug legalization and prostitution. You know, that is the negative connotation of the libertarian position. And that's, you ask anyone, what do you know about libertarians? Like, you know, the average uninformed voter.
Joe.
That's what they associate them with.
Yeah.
And so that is harmful, but you can change minds.
I think that the majority of Americans have admitted to smoking pot. So the pot thing I could see being a benefit to the Libertarian Party. Because there's not another party who is honestly associated with the desire to decriminalize or legalize entirely marijuana. And I think that could be a huge asset to the party. simply because it's got so many beneficial uses medically. So many people have cancer and lose their appetite because of chemo radiation and could really benefit from the stress relieving properties and the dietary benefits that marijuana offers. So the prostitution thing, yeah, that's probably a divisive issue, but I think for the majority of Americans, that would be a selling point for the Libertarian Party, the marijuana thing.
Yeah, it is. It, as the populace changes and the voting populace changes, that will be, assuming it's done right.
Right.
You know, that's the thing, is if you, it's one of those issues that if you step out on that ledge,
you got to use science and not party.
If you use that 10 word answer that just buries your political career forever,
every
no
time.
Other politician will touch it.
Right.
But if you make it though, like, you know, like Gina said, if you make it about, you know what, we're not going to build those drones.
Right.
Instead, we're going to shore up the VA hospital system, make it more efficient.
Right.
That's a winning argument. I mean, and that can come from either side. You just have to have the political courage to go down that road.
Right. And there are so many baby boomers that are the majority of the voters right now. And when you go back historically, baby boomers are the kids that were partying in the 60s. Baby boomers smoke pot, guys, or at least they have. At least they have some sort of...
They inhaled. They didn't pull a Clinton
and
cop out.
Well, I mean, Clinton is a baby boomer himself, and at the time he had a tremendous amount of responsibility. And I think, honestly, there was almost a certain level of courage in his cowardice in that answer, because he was the first American president to admit to smoking pot, but in order to not, like, completely crash and burn on that response, that was like an MTV interview or something.
Yep, MTV interview.
In order to not completely crash and burn, he had to, you know, split both sides of the fence. Yes, I've smoked it, but no, I didn't inhale, so it didn't, you know, irrevocably F my brain up so that I could no longer, you know, serve as your president.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even though there was a cowardice element in the I did not inhale, the honesty and the genuine response in that, because, I mean, he was probably thinking on his feet. He probably had to come up with a response and said, yes, I did. And then, like, backtracked immediately into, but I didn't inhale.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, well, then you wasted my weed, brah. What are you doing?
Yeah. So, waste not.
Right. Waste not, want not, homie.
Yeah. It's, and his original question was, why do you get so tarred and feathered if you do vote Democrat? And what's the hatred towards Democrats when you, in fact, are a libertarian? And I think the biggest thing is we haven't seen a liberty-oriented Democrat. That
Truth.
Show us one, and I don't think you'll get that. Show us a Western, like a Colorado governor who's a Democrat that also supports small government, but then at the same time wants to talk about civil liberties and societal reforms.
Right. Are you for real stroking your pussy into the microphone?
Would you stop it? What, did the language?
Well, what else do you call that thing? That fuzzy little four-legged beast?
I call her Mittens.
Oh, why are you seriously stroking your mittens into the microphone?
I'm petting her with the microphone while you guys are talking. Listen, Gina doesn't get a lot of airtime, so when Gina has something she likes to talk about, I want Gina to talk about it. Right?
While Mittens purrs into the microphone.
Right, Mittens? Mittens, you're not cut out for radio.
Darn.
All right.
She's definitely abandoning ship and just hopped right off your lap.
We just tweeted a podcast selfie. Because, Greg, honestly, I've never seen anyone who can't take a picture on an iPhone. It's, like, seriously the easiest thing on the planet, and you can't do it.
I can't.
Which one did you tweet? I want
like,
to see.
All right, this one right here is the best picture Greg took.
Aww.
Look how bad that is.
That's awesome.
Okay, this is the second best.
Yikes.
All right, so I will tweet those out at We Are Libertarians, the letter R.
Let me
R.
see the one that you tweeted.
That's what I tweeted out. All right.
What you don't know is that I refuse to convert to iPhone, so asking me to touch it was like asking me to convert to Islam.
Let Greg see the one you tweeted. That is so awesome.
Yeah, so check that out. We Are Libertarians. We, the letter R, Libertarians.
Please join us there. I do like our Twitter.
All right, let's take another question here. You guys wrap it up with the love of the left there?
You
bastards.
You are actually extremely quiet, and I would... You don't have anything to talk about that?
No, seriously. I talked before. And like I said, listen, Gina...
I'm a left libertarian.
Right.
But I mean, for a guy that's in charge of shaping libertarian messaging nationally... For you to totally abstain on libertarian messaging...
I was...
Get him, Greg.
Listen, I was taking selfies with my cat.
Right, he was engrossed otherwise.
I can't believe we have 52% voter turnout. You know, the guy that's in charge of national messaging would rather talk about Rob Ford and taking selfies with his cat in a tie-dye shirt.
Listen, it's almost Thanksgiving. My brain gets full of cranberries and stuffing and
hey, have you seen how Rush's book is doing? And people are hating it. Yeah. Rush wrote a children's book accurately describing the original Thanksgiving feast.
Right.
And how early America, it was communal, and then they all end up turning into each other because everyone's, you know, since everybody owned everything, they didn't have to work as hard, and so it failed. You know, essentially right. society failed, and it became more of, no, if you build it, if you create it, if you work it, it's yours, you are entitled to it. It doesn't belong to all of us. And that's sort of the message that he wants to get across about Thanksgiving. It's number one now 3 weeks in a row on the New York Times bestseller list.
Like the other one in the children's section, number two. I mean, it's one about Paul Revere's ride, I think it was.
Yeah, Rush Revere.
Rush Revere, where he made himself a lead character.
I do have to say, though, his tea is delicious. Like, I disagree with a lot of things on Rush, but he makes incredible tea.
What are you talking about?
Rush Limbaugh has a tea company, Two If By Tea.
I had no idea.
And no, you know how, like, tea you buy at the store, or, like, right. The gas station's cloudy?
Yeah.
It is as crystal clear, freshly brewed tea in all different flavors, and you have to order it through his website. And I think all the profits go towards Wounded Warriors, but I'm not sure. Like,
that's,
it is really
that's
cool.
admirable if all of the proceeds go towards
Do you have the chair?
Huh?
Do you have the EIB chair?
I don't. I am a former... I can't really listen to him anymore. Right. I really have a hard time listening to Rush. I don't even watch Fox anymore.
Yeah.
I'll watch Stossel. I really like... I have great respect for John Stossel, but I can't watch O'Reilly, Hannity...
That's how you know that we've got you.
Yeah. I just want to scream... And you're a Beck fan, and I think Beck is a great first taste of what little bit of liberty is like.
Right.
But I just... Oh, it's
have,
so
have
hard.
Not listened since that one episode.
Yeah, when he tanked on Sarvis.
Yep, I have not listened since.
It's hard to find good media for what we believe.
That's right. Let's keep it going. Ready?
Yes.
And go. This comes from Fool, and you'll know why he calls himself that in a minute. Fool writes, "Esteemed hosts, I'm a huge fan of your show. I only regret that I have not written earlier to commend you on continually doing better." See? It works.
We'll do better next
That's right.
time.
See? We do better next time.
We're in a slump right now.
These things happen.
I blame Gina.
Yes, definitely my fault.
Let's talk about the religion show. I'm a gloss over the Islam part because I really don't have a dog in that fight. I take issue with the way you represented Christianity, because as much as you said it's not about stuffing Christianity into your favorite political flavor, that's exactly what you did. To an evangelical Christian listener, it might have sounded dead on. To others, even a Christian outside of evangelicism, Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, it sounded like a circle jerk. We'll explain what that is later, Gina.
I know exactly what that is.
I heard mentioned...
Libertarian circle jerk is how I have described everyone at the party's meetings that I've gone to.
It's true. I heard mention of true believers, and that kind of talk makes me cringe. What you need to realize is that evangelicism within the wider Christian community itself is a small sect. It's a sect of a sect. Let that sink in. I wish I could take a picture of Greg's face right now. Conflating evangelicism with Christianity is misleading and just plain false. You're right that there are interpretations of Christianity compatible with libertarianism, and it's no surprise the obvious example is one, now a globalized expression of contemporary American Protestantism, that has roots in the same crucible as classical liberalism. But there are also interpretations compatible with more collectivist ideologies, which use the Book of Acts as a blueprint. And something like 60% of Christians, Catholic and Eastern Orthodox, that embrace some of the sacramentalism, which is by nature communal, over and above any sort of personal salvation. Then there's the hypocrisy of dismissing the lunatic fringe who want to bring about the end times. It's called dominionism. Not really. Dominionism is, we'll explain that in a minute. Remind me, Gina.
Okay.
Distributed as Christian Reconstructionism, and through the actual core card-carrying adherents are small in number, the political ideology has found its way into mainstream evangelical circles and is at least entertained in it in much of mainline Protestantism. I can't do that word. I can't say...
It sounds like a diatribe.
I can't,
when does it wrap up?
I can't take... Yeah. We're getting there.
Okay.
Hugely influential group, the Gary Norris Christian Reconstructionism. So we talked a little bit about that. I think you should have followed Mr. Pickle Peckers, LOL, lead and left this one alone. All that said, I still love your show. We love you too, even though do not judge us. or hold any hate in your heart for how we are about to discuss this letter,
son. How
we're
about to rip into your opinion.
And I will still listen and learn a lot from it. Wish my friends weren't such statists and laugh out loud in my car at your antics and at Maya's rage quits. If you've read this far, thank you. Also, this may be more about me than it is about you. Maya's rage quits, new term.
Rage quits.
Right. And your friends wouldn't be statist if you forced them to listen to this show.
Let's be clear, though. It's not a rage quit. It's a wage sabbatical.
A rage sabbatical. Right. All right. Let me start here. I was speaking.
And thank you for your well thought out and well articulated
right.
opinion.
That writer...
stupid son of a bitch.
Okay. No, but we do. That is the level of listener we want. Someone that can articulately state their position and it's well researched.
I joke, fool. But I will say that when I talk about. When I talked about the religion episode, I was talking from my own perspective. So you can cringe at what I am saying, but I am not saying that. That is what everybody should think, and that is what everybody believes, because we had every religious opinion sitting around the couch as we were discussing that entire article.
Yeah, we definitely run the gamut around
so
here.
I wasn't saying that evangelical... I was saying that I do find that there are a lot of parallels, and I don't think that it is inconsistent to be a person of faith and a libertarian. Just because people like David Barton and the Christian Dominionists do believe that you have to control a society through your Christian faith because that will create better outcomes. Just because they believe that doesn't mean that I believe that. Just because I associate myself with a certain group, namely Methodism or Evangelicalism, it doesn't mean that I agree with everything that goes on within that group. That, sir, is collectivist thinking, and on this podcast, we will have none of it. So I was speaking only for myself. I find there to be a nice fit. I didn't say that you can't be a libertarian and you have to be a Christian to be a libertarian or any of that kind of bullcrap. You know, I don't think that Republicans are going to hell for being Republicans. I don't know what you're saying. Listen, stop it.
I guess his biggest issue was he feels like we overgeneralized. I guess that would be without properly.
We always do. That's our.
You
MO.
Have to. If we had to cover everything about the various sects and the very, I mean, we can hardly do it about. We can hardly do it with libertarianism. I mean, honestly, we can't talk about the agorists enough. You know, you don't talk about objectivists ever. You know,
so if you're talking about Christianity, that. Evangelicism is not a small sect of a sect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, the number one Christian magazine is Christianity Today, founded by Billy Graham. It's an evangelical magazine. Christian media is like not TBN or any of those type of shows, not the more charismatic stuff. But if you were to go on and look for Christian blogs or go to Christian websites, it's mainly dominated by evangelicals. If you turned on Christian radio, dominated by evangelical thought.
I advertise all the time on the Christian Media and Advertising Online Network. I buy do huge ad buys on there because it's all old people. It's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. So I don't think that it's a small sect
investment.
Of a sect. Yeah. It, you know, evangelicals have really gone after, and I'm not saying that that is a better way of Christianity than Catholicism. My whole family's Catholic. I was baptized Catholic.
I didn't know that.
Became a Methodist, yeah.
Man, you and your whole family's Republican, too.
Mm-hmm.
How are family get-togethers for you?
I just walk in there and I tell them exactly what they ought to believe.
Make a triple plate, like a good sit down and watch some football.
Like a good Christian libertarian, I walk in there and call them all sinners and tell them that they need to vote for Gary Johnson. I'm a pleasure, sir. So no one loves Thanksgiving
delightful.
More than my family.
Oh, yeah, right?
No, like, see, I'm like the political person in the family, so when we go to mass gatherings of family at the holidays, you know, the uncle will want to come up and start, like, all right, so what can I relate to him about? He clearly has no interest in sports. Look at the size of this heifer. So let me talk to him about politics.
Heifers are girls, by the way.
Heifers are girls? Well, that fits. So when you're, you know, I'm the political guy, so what about that Obama? And then I answer the question, and...
Oops.
Then my sister inevitably will walk by. Oh my God, are you talking about politics? Oh my God, you run everywhere. I'm like, he asked me, leave me alone.
Yeah, I have that problem too. I've got, when I go to family gatherings, my family is, there's several Christians, there's several staunch Republicans, which I'm obviously not.
Right.
And so it's like,
you had the devil horns.
Exactly.
Carved into your forehead.
It's that son of, it's that, that swastika in the middle of my forehead that gives me away.
Right.
But yeah, no, I have a difficult time at family gatherings because of my political beliefs and my religious abstention.
Is it your political beliefs?
What is that
or
word
the
for
fact,
abstaining?
Or is it the fact that you tell everyone else when they start talking about that they're stupid and wrong and you argue?
I normally don't say a word until I
did
get
drunk.
Did
she just say excuse me?
I did.
Wow.
Are you okay?
Yeah, for the most part.
She's changed.
Well, I know you'd hate to edit and you're lazy. That's all.
You've totally changed, man.
No. So basically, I'll find, I'll occasionally overhear a conversation and add my two cents, but for the most part, someone will ask me, trying to goad me. They will succeed, and then everybody's having a bad time.
And have you seen Home for the Holidays with, oh gosh, who's in it? It's like the only Thanksgiving movie is Home for the Holidays. And it,
is that with
Holly Hunter?
Yes. Yep.
Is it Holly Hunter?
Holly Hunter. And yeah. Then it's,
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. Is Robert De Niro in that one?
No.
Or no, that's a different one.
But anyways, the whole family just ends in ruin because the daughter just is the social misfit of the group. You should watch it. You'd identify with it.
It sounds like it, yeah.
My favorite professor in college, he's a preeminent professor here at IUPUI in political science, and I never knew what he was, but he used to talk about, he grew up in Berkeley, California. He used to talk about like his first experience where he didn't have Thanksgiving at home. And of course, grew up in Berkeley, parents hardcore, like radical 60s liberals.
Right.
And he was like, every Thanksgiving would end up in like chairs being thrown around a political issue, like someone would get hit with a turkey leg.
You know, down knockout.
And he was like, it wasn't until I was 23 and I didn't go to my, I went to a friend's Thanksgiving because I was out of the country. And I realized that not everyone else's was like this. And I was like, I would have loved that. I would have just loved to have been totally unattached to any position and just sit there and throw wrenches right in the gears. Right.
Have you ever been to like a church gathering where you sat there in awe of what was going on and the person that you went with thought that it was totally normal?
I've gone to a lot of church gatherings, but I often go alone.
Well, but is it your church or someone else's church?
I'll tell you, there was one time I went to the Calvary Temple here in Indianapolis, and it's a very apostolic church. It's up off, it's by Fountain Square, if you're from Indianapolis. And it probably is safe to say that in the history of sermons, this was the most anti-gay sermon of all time.
Oh, wow.
And I just remember being, it was probably 2004, and I remember being horrified.
Wow.
And I just, like, it was racist, it was bigoted, it was horrifying. I mean, and I just thought, I can't believe that this person goes here and loves this and gets something out of this. Now, this person does not attend to that sect of Christianity anymore, but it was really unbelievable. And I kind of said to the person, hey, did you see anything wrong with that? Like, right. Did you notice that they were, you know, saying when all the fags die, we'll all be better off? Like,
whoa.
any issues with that at all?
Oh, the First Church of Santorum.
Right.
Right.
I've had three experiences visiting other people's churches that just horrified me so thoroughly that, like, remember I told you I had that one negative experience with the homeless situation at a right. church that I considered my own. Well, I shopped other churches after that. One was a Pentecostal church, and once people started getting saved by the Spirit and passing out and fainting, I was kind of like, whoa. You know, and I could see how it developed. I could see how it was beneficial to people. But for me personally, it was kind of like, whoa. And then I had one experience where I was maybe 9, 10 years old, and I went to church with a friend. And at one point, they were singing about, like, tearing down the walls because of Jesus's foundation. And this woman got up and started clawing at the bricks to the point that she was leaving blood. And it was just like, whoa. And then, like you mentioned, I ended up in one really bigoted church that was very small down south. And they were discussing how the mark of the beast and the Cain and Abel, maybe not the mark of the beast, but the mark that God laid down through the whole Cain and Abel parable had to do with black skin, and how that if you were basically, if you had dark skin, you were, I don't know, unworthy of God's love or something.
You were unworthy of entrance into heaven.
Right. Yeah. So it was just like, what the hell, people? What are you doing? And how does this make sense to you? It's just really interesting to me how certain people have interpreted the Bible to fit their own bigotry and their own scale of distaste for other people.
Well, I wonder, and too, like when people hear that kind of stuff, like why doesn't somebody stand up and say
you're stupid?
Well, I mean, maybe not. Most people are not going to be. They don't want to be impolite. They don't want to stand up and scream.
As a
like
visitor, you don't.
Or even if you're a church member, you don't want to stand up and be like, I don't really think that killing gays is going to solve anything.
Pretty sure you're reading that wrong.
Right. Pretty sure that is not in the New Testament.
And that won't get you anywhere anyway.
Right.
What you have to do is ask them with questions.
Right. But why stay there? Why support that? Like,
yeah.
my friend was not...
When that around, don't put a dime in.
Right. My friend was like, I don't agree with them on that part, but they, you know, I love the people there. They're great people. I'm like, well, but... They're talking about openly murdering people. Like,
right,
that doesn't
you're down
make the,
with that.
Yeah,
that is
like
one of those Ten Commandments, guys. Yeah. I read those.
Right. I got at least that portion.
Right.
I read the bullet points.
Exactly.
That's what it is. You want to know what Christianity is? Just read the Ten Commandments.
The
it's
eye
a bullet point
the X,
Christianity.
That's what you need.
Yep. You know, they come down. There's a golden calf being worshipped. There's some guy with a couple tablets saying that he had a weird experience with lightning and a voice up in the skies. They had to have been drunk.
All I know is the Red Sea was parted and we're all good.
Yeah.
Right.
No, it's really, and I don't know, this almost goes back as to like even like our society's educational process is, why does religion get a free pass on critical thinking?
I have no idea.
Like why does it get the assumption, the assumption is that it is correct. That's the standard in most of society today, is that at the end of the day, even ask an atheist or someone who's really doesn't know what they are, or they don't go to church, is that, who is Jesus? What's the first response? Son of God.
Right.
No one ever challenges that assumption and says, no, let's just look at it. Who
yeah, but
was
people
he?
Challenge that assumption all the time. And I think most people, they want to believe that the stereotype is the first, that is the rule, not the exception of every group, that Christians really are Benny Hinn
no.
and are the pink-haired lady and all that, or that they are just a bunch of bigoted homophobes, you know, and that they're not bright people that don't struggle and wrestle with serious questions. And I think that if you were to really kind of peel back the onion and dive deep, there are people like Ed Stetzer, for instance, or Albert Mohler. You may not agree with them, but they seriously wrestle with a lot of these questions. I mean, the whole study of theology is about wrestling with these larger theological questions. There's constant arguments amongst intellectuals that going back and forth, people like N.T. Wright.
But they don't happen in churches.
Right.
They don't happen on Sundays.
That, right. That, yeah.
That's what needs, I think that would be an incredible, I've always thought, you know, in my older years, what I would love is to open a church that instead of looking at it where I am going to preach the gospel and you are going to agree with my interpretation or leave my church, I'm going to bring in experts, I'm going to bring in public policy, and we are going to examine it through a Christian framework. We're going to talk about ideas, and we're going to start at the beginning and build from there.
Boy, line me up.
I know, no one would come.
Sounds thrilling.
No one would come. But I do think interesting conversations would happen.
Right.
I really do.
Yeah, I think... There are some churches that probably foster that, and I do think that there are larger conversations. But by and large, like every other group on the planet, libertarians included, there's groupthink and there's go along to get along kind of thinking. There's not a lot of challenging because people don't want to rock the boat. And it's, you know, what I was talking about is the exceptional and what you were talking about is the normal. Why would we hold that against Christians? When it happens in every other group, it happens in every single office. In every office, there are exceptional people, and then there are the rest of the folks who just want to show
I
up,
feel
get
like
their paycheck, and go home.
You've gotten attacked a lot for being a Christian, have you not? Especially within the Libertarian Party?
Within the Libertarian Party, it's not attacked, per se. I mean, it's not, people don't sit there and go, you're an idiot for being a Christian. it's...
You get overgeneralized as a crazy Christian?
That, and it's, like, it's a negative tone. It's inherently a negative thing. Whereas if I were an atheist, or if I were really kind of anything other than what the norm is, which is a WASP, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, I don't think that there would be that negative tone. And that's what I really take umbrage with. I don't have any problems with anybody's I really don't have a lot of problems with a lot of people.
Is Christianity a philosophical way of life for you, or like a code and way of life, or is it something else? Like, have you ever thought about why exactly you are a Christian? What's that one point?
Of course. I mean, like I said last week, it's, it was not inherent. It was not something I grew up in. It became an incredibly important part of my life in my 20s, and I'm 30. So I've spent more of my life as an atheist than I did a Christian. What I have a problem with is when people have that judgy negative tone, honestly. Like, let people live, let people be. And for a group of people who love to sit there and preach about how we should just let people be, anytime anybody comes up and says, well, you know, I believe that Jesus was the Savior and these are my personal beliefs, why do you have to, like, go after that? Why, you know, I don't... Let's have a rational, reasonable discussion, but don't treat me with a negative...
Don't immediately categorize me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
so why are you a Christian?
And I'm not saying that... Listen, I'm not one of these Bill O'Reilly people who are like, oh, it's a cultural thing. I mean, it really, truly is sort of a negative little... It's not bigotry. It's not anti-anything. It's just people's first reflexive reaction.
Yeah, it defines you immediately from the start. So,
right.
So what was it that sealed the deal for you and decided to commit?
For me, it was intensive study into archaeological digs in, you know, scientifically, archaeologically, proving it with documents, finding that things are the way that they were, that there is always going to be an element of faith, but there is a rational foundation for Christianity.
Okay.
Okay. That people like Jesus existed. He really
Jesus,
did.
Jesus right. existed.
Right.
And this is what I could never get beyond is, and I don't know if this is you or not, but for me, religion was an economic decision.
Okay.
I want eternal afterlife. I do not want to be damned in hell where the worst fears of my entire life will happen over and over again to me each and every day. As Gina takes the most awkward picture ever. Hey, well done.
Yeah, another selfie right in the middle.
And that to me was always the appeal, and I think it was the unchallenged appeal that you will
like.
Get.
How does it become an economic decision?
Eternal afterlife. I want eternal afterlife. It was economic. It was not because I believe that Jesus. If people flushed it out, like I'm sure you did,
right?
This is the right way to live. I have decided that I am going to follow his moral foundations because I believe that is the correct way to live. No issue with you. If you tell me that's because I want to have eternal life, don't you?
Right.
I will mock you relentlessly because you don't even know you just made
decision. Once you say, okay, this is plausible, and then you go down this road and you study the content of it, first, is this text reliable? Then study the content of it. Then you see the beauty in the stories. And eventually obedience kicks in, but it has nothing to do
See,
with...
See, that's where I draw the line. Start talking about obedience, and I'm way off the chip, Noah.
But there is... I'm not the type of person who is going to be ruled by fear.
No.
You know, I mean, not going to be ruled by fear that this, you know, that, you know, I'm going to be cast into an eternal flame of damnation, so I better not smoke a cigarette.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I think... I think that that is a myth that is... I'm not saying heaven or hell is a myth. I'm saying that using shame and fear is a tool of the 1800s and the 1700s and our puritanical past. And there is not enough joy in the Christian movement, and that's why people don't want to be a part of it. Why would I want to show up someplace to be judged and told that I suck and that everything is horrible and you're a bad person and you better fly right. Which is ironic that I'm a Methodist, because like that's how it was founded.
Yes.
But
that's what really baffles me, because I went through the same youth group right. you did, and everybody kept talking and giving their testimonials and talking about how their heart was strangely warmed. And I sat there and I'm like, when the hell's this over? Like, I love my mom to death, and it was a great time, so I made great friends in youth group.
You're like, I've got to ride my bike to the liquor store.
Well, I just was always waiting for my heart to be strangely warmed, and I sat there, and everybody was having these experiences, and I was like, somebody give me a hymnal. I'm just going to read for a bit so I can get this over faster.
Yeah, no, my dad.
Just do something to read.
Yeah. So I think that there is a total lack of emphasis on joy and some of the more positive aspects, and it just drives me crazy. But, you know. Anyways, enough about this. We've probably already lost all our listeners between abortion and this.
Well, you won't talk
we
about abortion.
We talked about abortion for 27 seconds. You shit your pants and we moved on.
Yeah.
That's right.
And let me tell you, the stench is horrible in here after Spangle had a fecal emergency.
It's a fecal emergency, people. Okay, kids. So, podcast next week. What do we want to do with Thanksgiving week? Do we want to take the week off?
You know what? No, I really kind of... We don't want to do it on Thursday, obviously.
No,
obviously.
I'd like to do it on Friday.
Okay, we can
personally,
do that.
Personally, or Wednesday.
Well, I mean, that's a shopping day, and I have a vagina, so we might have to negotiate the Friday thing.
And especially with your newly found funds.
Right.
That are of
this is true.
Questionable sourcing.
This is true. Wow, I feel like I just got shot down and served.
I'm not judging you. I'm very much in support of your newly found funds.
All right, we'll figure out the day and time, but we will have a podcast next week.
Yes.
Because we've got nothing to do.
I think it would be good to break. Why don't we do it before, like a Tuesday, so that we can discuss the whole.
We're never going to have a topic to talk about by Tuesday.
We could, though. Why don't we discuss Thanksgiving? Because, I mean, I have
we
opinions.
Give the history of Thanksgiving.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah.
Greg, get on that.
Okay.
We'll study the history of Thanksgiving and break
it down.
And
I'm just going to look at it from the perspective of a descendant of Native Americans. So it's all going to be my opinion.
Oh, great.
I like that.
Here it comes.
No, here's why.
Here comes the oppression episode.
Oh,
here's why. Is I had an experience, and I got totally Ruiz'd in chat.
Yeah.
President George W. Bush, I don't know if everybody knows this, was on.
I've heard of him.
He was on Jay Leno. I think it was, last night or two nights ago.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, he only did it because he has great respect for Jay, and Jay's come and done the Wounded Warriors Project free.
It's nice to see you.
Did you watch the videos?
Nice to see you, Jay.
Before I forget, okay, hold on.
Impressions.
I know I heard it, but before I forget, Heinz is doing a thing for the Wounded Warriors Project, too. So I wanted to throw that out there. Get yourself some
You
Heinz.
Know why? George W. Bush and John Kerry were both bonesmen at Yale.
Really?
John Kerry is, in fact, married to Miss Heinz.
Right.
And
oh,
bonesmen
right.
always support another bonesman in outside, outside politics. When they ran against each other, if you brought up their fact that they were both bonesmen at Yale, they would walk out of the room.
Weird.
They are not allowed to talk about it unless in a room of only bonesmen.
Weird.
What is this thing called, that square?
Oh, a QR code.
Okay, so there is a QR code on the back of most bottles of Heinz, some that you can even find commercially at restaurants. And if you scan that, Heinz will donate $1 to the Wounded Warrior Project.
Cool.
So do that. But go ahead about the G-Dub.
No, I was incredibly amazed for a guy that has been, essentially, he is Satan on Earth. I mean,
right.
to the point, Hugo Chavez, after he spoke at the UN, goes, I still smell the sulfur. I mean, it was he had the worst messaging ever, but he was incredibly funny. I mean, he came across, like, Jay Leno goes, you look, relaxed and, like, you're really enjoying it. And he looked at him, he's like, duh. Like, he was...
I don't have a website that didn't work.
Well, I mean, but he was thoughtful.
I just drowned a city.
Wow, really? Wow.
I just started a war that we didn't need.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Have fun with your...
But he explained that. He touched on that. That was one thing he said very briefly. Didn't talk about politics. He was incredibly respectful of the president. He wouldn't even begin to say, Leno asked him, he goes, why have you been so quiet? Most presidents usually, after the first 4 years, they're not nearly as that you can't get access to them. And he's like,
I mean, Clinton was always going after Bush, and I'm sure it had to irritate him.
Yeah, but then they're good friends. They're really close friends, and especially H.W. and Clinton.
How can you not like Bill Clinton? Come on.
That's true.
I had issue.
Bill Clinton is whoever he wants to be.
Exactly.
We're building a bridge to the 21st century, and that bridge is made out of wood.
It was my favorite Conan O'Brien when they used to have Smigel do the cutout mouth.
Oh, and when it was the Donald or Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
My cult classic, Jingle All the Way.
And it was Bill, he was doing Bill Clinton, and I remember being on vacation in Florida watching. He's like, we're building a bridge to the 21st century. And we're building that bridge out of wood. Whee! I don't think I've ever laughed harder in my life.
All I watched when he talked about it was the biggest thing that he even gave insight into his political views was when Jay Leno asked him about our role in the world, and he asked him about all his work in Africa, and he goes, honestly, Jay, he goes, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if we weren't involved over there, knowing we could help.
Right.
Aww.
And I thought,
really? G-Dub had a heart?
Oh, I think that was, and I think that's the thing. I think he was someone who knew and understood the power the United States has in the world. And that was his downfall, though, was committing us to Iraq, was getting bad information from bad advisors. And he trusted them. And because he wanted to be a force of spreading liberty, spreading democracy, right. spreading
that
women's
and
rights.
The VP had a lot to do with
the aggression.
No,
but I mean, that's
level.
What I mean. Like, he trusted Cheney
advisors.
Way too much.
Yeah.
He
put, and because Bush was a. Bush
he
is
bowed
a text.
Down to Cheney because he's terrifying.
But Dick Cheney, for Christ's sakes, the war on drugs started because of Dick Cheney and a Nixon campaign meeting.
Yeah, he was just too trusting of people like Cheney and Rumsfeld.
He was, and then I thought to myself, because he was incredibly well-spoken and funny, and I mean, I was shocked the crowd cheered for him. I really thought they'd boo.
Right.
And he was articulate, and then I thought to myself, like, wow, what a bad job Karl Rove did. Yeah. If you had put this man in a presented him in a way that let him be
lovable.
Who he really is,
yeah.
and not tried to make him into this Texas tough,
right.
you know, badass.
Like Cheney counterpart.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the Lord of Death, Dick Cheney.
Right.
And his apparently war on lesbians that's going on within his own family, because Liz comes out against gays and her sister throws her under the bus. That'll be
a
fun Thanksgiving.
I've got a brand new heart, and I just wanted to say thank you to the heart. Screw the bastard that gave it to me and his family.
I mean, but if you
like,
were chief
really?
Of staff for Nixon at age 31, you would have had 5 heart attacks by now. I mean, for Christ's sakes, they were committing crimes in the White House.
Really dropping two slurs against Jesus on
what
this
was that?
Podcast. He said, Christ's sakes.
I didn't have a T in there.
You know what? You're forgiven.
I
don't worry.
I forgive you, son.
That's all right.
Take a Bible with you.
You've got plenty.
I know. All right. Let's final. Is that your soapbox item, Greg? Or is there anything
yeah, I guess. Well, I thought it was really good. And yeah. I hope people watch it.
Just trying to convert people back to your Republican ways, aren't you?
Not at all. I just
once
I have
again.
Not at all. I don't care that you support. Bush was not a conservative whatsoever.
Right.
I'm just saying, you know, for a guy that's portrayed as the Lord of like Cheney, you know,
right.
He's not the worst person I've ever seen.
Again, it's hip. It's socially acceptable to say that you hate this guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Even though his predecessor
have,
has
yeah.
probably been, I don't know if he's been worse, but.
They're almost indistinguishable.
Yeah. They're really exactly the same. So, Gina Bear.
Yes, dear.
Anything that you would like to share with the audience that you didn't get to during this show?
The Wounded Warrior Project we mentioned. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff, but I never have it written down. I should do that for show prep.
You should
hit me up in advance so that I can write those things down. But there's
hey Greg, what time do we do the podcast?
7.
Right. What day?
Gosh.
Thursday.
Unless what happens?
We don't have enough co-hosts available, so we do it Saturday around noon or 1.
Right.
There we go.
So every what day?
So here's
Thursday or Saturday.
Right.
Here's what 7. I'm going to go ahead and plug. Get up off your sofa and see how you can volunteer 2 hours a week. For any worthy organization of your choosing. And if you can't find one, go to theunitedway.com. Do something like the Angel Tree, which is coming up for needy families. Things like that, I think, are good uses of your time. So use your time wisely and choose your words wisely, because Lord knows I've chosen my words poorly and they could be manipulated to say or mean just about anything.
That's right. I'm going to edit this so good.
Exactly. Learn from my mistakes.
I would say, I don't even know what I want to talk about. What
abortion?
Mention
yes,
abortion.
Weigh in on abortion.
Abortion happens and I don't like it.
Okay.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
Going out on a limb and saying I'm not a fan of abortion.
Also hasn't been pregnant, ladies.
Right.
So.
See, there you go with your vagina again.
I know. Let my vagina just flop all over the place.
Vaginal entitlement. It's what's bringing America down.
Really.
Every time.
I'm so sick of living in a gynocracy.
God.
All right. That's enough of that. All right.
We said vagina. It's over.
Yeah. It ain't over till the vagina. Never mind. All right.
I believe Greg. The proper term is called a queef.
Greg, plug something and not a vagina.
I don't even know. I'm like stunned.
Right. Wow. It's amazing.
Well, this has been a show. All right. I'm going to put an R rating on this one.
Look at the time. We got finished within 3 minutes of
I know.
Deadline.
Exactly
so
right. Greg doesn't like to do story time with Gina, so he needs to leave at 9 p.m.
Not true. It was just an existing obligation. I love story time with Gina,
That's right.
I can't wait for whenever the next
and
one comes out that I can be on.
Just the preview that you got earlier was enough,
my.
I believe.
If you knew, I know like an eighth of what's gone on in your life the last month.
Yeah.
I know an eighth. And I can't believe it.
She stabbed a guy with a trident.
That's a lie.
You really
it
should
was
lay
a
low.
Pitchfork.
Yeah.
Gina, you killed a guy.
Killed a guy.
You lit that dollar on fire.
Yeah, well, you know, that would be a federal offense if that had happened. So are allegations.
Peppers was like, Gina really was kind of like mad at me the last podcast. I said, if I told you what had been going on in Gina's life up to that point, A, you would have called me a liar.
Right.
And B, you would have said, oh, I get it.
Oh,
would you
sense.
Like to apologize to Peppers?
If the Peppers have the cojones to come back, I will apologize to them in person.
Listen, if you kill a Peppers, it's okay. We have a spare.
Exactly. So. We have a pair of Peppers. We always pick a pair of Peppers, and that makes everything acceptable.
All right, kiddies. Thank you for listening to this episode of We're Libertarians.
And
please,
as always, we promise to
share it with your friends on Facebook and Twitter,
gross.
Because they will like this too, I promise. And also, go to iTunes, rate us. Give us a little bit of a rating there. Five
don't
stars. And if it's anything less than 5 stars, don't rate us.
Yeah.
And write a nice little comment. We really do appreciate that. That helps us. Hey, maybe one day in the future we could get featured on the front page of iTunes. How would that kick ass?
I would not even know it happened.
I know.
Figure my way through my.
We've been on the front page of Mediaite.
That's true.
Have
and
we really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The Ron Paul interview.
You were gone that week.
Oh yeah, that makes sense then.
That was one of Gina's. What is it? The lost weekend that Lennon had.
Yeah, I think I went on a month long weekend vacation. Yeah.
So, were you in Iowa this week?
I was not. All I said was that Iowa, I love you, and people assumed that I was there.
Wonder how that people could assume something so weird.
I mean,
like I got both the Peppers boys down here to do the show because I thought, well, Gina's in Iowa.
Well, so. There went Gina. She's off to Iowa.
Or is she quietly trying to get the GOP nomination by spending time out there?
How cool would that be?
That would be awesome.
I would support you. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And as always,
we promise to do better next time.
Aww.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.